The 25th of April is Anzac Day. On this day in 1915, tens of thousands of young, eager men from Australia and New Zealand arrived at Gallipoli in Turkey. Their boats mistakenly reached a small cove at Arabunu, later to be renamed Anzac Cove. What eventuated is a story that has long been told. This week, we look at the story of the Anzac Battle from a different perspective, one told by Turkish Australians. I'm Erdem Koç.
And I'm Ozan İbrişim.
Welcome to Put Simply. Ozan, good to be back. Good to see you here on another episode of Put Simply. How are you going?
I'm doing well, thank you, Erdem. Good to be back with you. Looking forward to this week's conversation.
And a different one, because we thought what we tend to do is put things simply from a historical perspective or from a political perspective, but this week is a bit different because this week marks, as we said in the introduction, a very unique day for us as Turkish Australians because it's Anzac Day. It's the day that on 1915, tens of thousands of Australian and New Zealand army personnel descended on our country. I say our because you were born there. My parents were born there. We have a very strong connection to Turkey. We also have a very strong connection to Australia. We don't really want to go into the historical perspective as much this week, but I am super curious because Anzac Day has always been such a big day in Australia. What was it like for you growing up? What was the 25th of April and the rhetoric around it like? What's some of your earliest memories?
I have to say it was probably a day of confusion, contradicting feelings. I grew up in a house I can probably label as a pacifist house. So marking or commemorating a war instinctively or intuitively was something that didn't feel exactly right, particularly a war that involved my new home, which was Australia, but also the country of my birth, basically putting those two countries together in one day and really celebrating something, I suppose, that either side probably questions at various different times as to how we commemorate this. A lot of the rhetoric around it I found very confusing. I understand the lest we forget the symbolism of that. I think I have the utmost respect for anybody who serves in the armed forces of any country. I think anybody losing their life in war is horrific. And I get it from that point of view that we should never forget these people. But, you know, the conversation around why the Anzacs were there in the first place, what their role was. It's again, we don't want to get into the history too much, but it was pretty clear that I think most of them were confused about their role. To mention, and it goes, sometimes we forget that there were many people there from India, from the Indian Army, who were, of course, attached to the British Empire at the time, also landing on the beaches of Gallipoli during that campaign. I think there's a lot of confusion around this issue, and I think many people in Australia probably feel conflicted about it. You just have to have a look at the way that the campaign itself was conducted. It's got to be extremely unique in human history where two countries fought one another or two groups of people fought one another, trying to figure out why they were fighting each other, but also not really wanting to fight each other as well. And I think if you read accounts of life in the trenches during the Gallipoli campaign, you very quickly see that many, many people were involved in swapping or exchanging of gifts to one another in between fighting and trying to shoot each other. Many of the Anzacs were playing, and I believe there's accounts of the Turks also playing football and cricket. I've got to say, and I'm going to upset a lot of our Australian listeners probably, but I don't know what's worse, being shelled or being exposed to cricket. So the Turks really did have it pretty tough there. I know that's an un-Australian thing to say, but I had to put that in there. But look, I think it was a confusing war. So I don't think there's any surprise that growing up in Australia, as someone who was born in Turkey, I was pretty confused by the whole day.
And it's interesting because the day of victory for Turks in the battle for Çanakkale, which is the broader region of which Gallipoli is housed, actually comes much earlier in the sea battle victory on the 18th of March. And in Turkey, every year, the 18th of March is commemorated as the day the sea battle was won. Of course, what then followed in 1915 was the land invasion when the sea battle was lost by the Allied forces. The land invasion started on the 25th of April under extraordinarily, as you say, confusing circumstances. I think what's really interesting and what was interesting for me growing up is Australia is a young country, and it looks for that sense of identity. And it felt like Anzac Day was that day of identity in so many ways. It was the day that people would say things like, Australians sacrificed their lives for the freedoms that we enjoy today. And when you look at the facts and what was actually happening, the question I would always ask myself and ask others is, had the Anzac battle not took place, or had the Anzac battle been won for the Australians, what freedoms are we talking about here? What are the freedoms that you wouldn't have been able to enjoy today? Because when you think about it, the Anzacs weren't just fighting as Australian and New Zealanders. They were fighting, also called the AIF, right, the Australian Imperial Force. They were fighting for the Union Jack. And so there was a broader battle for imperialistic purposes as to why Australian New Zealanders were sent over to Gallipoli, as you say, to a very confusing part of the world. They didn't know, a lot of them didn't know where Turkey was and what they were doing there. The question is, had that battle been successful? Let's say Turkey was overtaken by Allied forces and the West controlled Turkey as we know it today. What would be different in Australia today? And the answer that I'd always get was, well, nothing. Because they weren't fighting for our freedoms. They weren't fighting to protect Australia. They were fighting to expand the British Empire's control over the region for self-serving purposes. That notion of this is why we exist as a country and the Anzac spirit and stuff, for me growing up, that was not only confusing, but it was actually very frustrating because 8,000 Australian and New Zealand soldiers died in Gallipoli, but 70,000 Turks lost their lives. And if you visit Gallipoli and have the pleasure of going to that incredibly beautiful landscape, you feel it there and you see the Turkish graves and you walk past them and you say, well, there's a huge side of this story that's not told in Australia.
I think we should get to your recollections. I know, Adam, you spent some months in Turkey on this topic in your previous life, looking into particularly Gallipoli, and spent a lot of time there. I want to kind of touch on what you were talking about in terms of the sacrifice. And I'm not a historian. I know enough to probably be dangerous, but I'm certainly not a historian. But really, if there was one war out of the two world wars where Australians and the whole world were fighting for values that we should all stand by, it was World War II. Now, I think the Germans played a very different role in World War I than they did in World War II. And certainly, if you look at it, I see World War I as nothing more than a battle of empires. And it was the kind of last battle, I suppose, within Europe. And that's why they, I suppose, call it the Great War. The last battle between empires that had been in conflict for many, many centuries. There's a great podcast that I would urge everybody to listen to, which is called Empire. And it's two actual historians talking, not me, but two actual historians talking about how the lead up to World War I actually occurred and what have you. So I am 100% with you. I never have understood the sacrifice rhetoric, but I don't see it very different to what the rhetoric was in Vietnam. One could argue what the rhetoric was during the days after or the months after September 11, very different contexts. But again, it's politicians and the propaganda that's been used to get people to rally around the flag. When people need to rally up a war effort, these are the things that people, I suppose, use to get the masses on board. I understand that. It's really very interesting as well when it comes to World War One. I mean, I suppose the people who were making real sacrifices were those 70,000 odd Turkish soldiers back then, Ottoman soldiers who died defending the coast of Gallipoli and various other places. led by the great Mustafa Kemal Atatürk. You know, these are the real sacrifices that I think people should be talking about. And again, that's not to devalue many of my friends who lost great grandparents or great grandfathers, etc., great great uncles in a senseless war, a senseless campaign that was Gallipoli. That's not to devalue their loss. As I said, I think every human being that's been lost in war is of value and should never be lost. Maybe that's the pacifist coming out of me, but it's a, you know, I think as a Turkish person, I feel very at odds with a lot of the rhetoric that I grew up with. And I think that's something that I suppose you don't really understand when you don't see things from the context. But at the same time, I've spoken to many people who have gone to the Anzac Day commemoration who are of, you know, are not of Turkish background, etc. They're moved to tears when they see a lot of the kind of commemorative wall and monuments that are in place are there. And, you know, they also think that it was a senseless war. And I think many people who see it for themselves and understand the history understand that, you know, the British Empire at the time has a lot to answer for in terms of sending a bunch of people who really had no place to be there. I mentioned the Indian troops. I mean, there are great stories, again, from the Empire podcast of Indian troops actually, some of them being Sikh Muslims, finding it very difficult to fight against they would have at the time considered as their Muslim brothers, particularly the Ottoman Empire and the important role that the Ottoman Empire played in the Islamic world back then. You know, putting these people up against one another for senseless objectives, I think there's a lot that needs to be answered for.
I think you're right about those who attend the Anzac ceremonies that are held every year. I had the privilege of being there in 2015 for the 100th year commemorations. It was a sold out, I use the word sold out loosely, but you know, there were no available tickets. I think it was 10,500 people had descended, which is the absolute capacity in that area. It's such a journey to get there. A lot of people would come from Istanbul via bus. You'd then have to take a ferry. It would then require another bus trip. The roads are, you know, are difficult to navigate. It's an area that you get dropped off at a certain point, then you have to walk. It, the momentum and the build up to when you finally reach Anzac Cove, if you're going part of the ceremonies, if you go another time, I think it's quieter and easier to get to. But as part of that ceremony, I just remember this, as you got closer, it felt more and more eerie. And by the time you get to Anzac Cove and asking people, I was a journalist at the time, so I was doing a lot of interviews, people were saying, people from Australian and New Zealand descent were saying, what on earth were we doing here? And you really get that sense of them thinking, "How? Like, this doesn't make any sense." And then, of course, they get to do the rest of the tour, which is then usually walking around the Turkish grave sites and the key spots of where the Turkish army, and as you mentioned, Atatürk, who was the commanding officer at the time, went on to become the founder of modern Turkey and the first Turkish president, you know, where he had sort of set up. And they go there and they think, geez, we were sitting ducks, right, from an Australian-New Zealand perspective. This just made no sense. And that fills my heart with joy of having that holistic picture to it, right? I think so much of my frustrations around the rhetoric of Anzac Day could be my frustrations around anything when there is that the missing holistic nature and the empathy and understanding the other side of the story here, which I think is a huge problem in modern society. You know, this, and we've spoken about this on podcasts before, this polarization of the world where you either think a particular way, and if you don't think that particular way, you know, you either stop being friends with that person, you stop talking to that person. This ability to talk about things in the middle of you know, the debate rather than on the far left or the far right. This has been a problem, I think, around this Australian rhetoric of what Anzac Day did. And the lessons from that battle have been, well, maybe we don't go to senseless war, guys. Maybe we don't go to senseless battles. Maybe we don't just throw troops and think that it's going to, you know, succeed. Because, well, have a look at Vietnam. Have a look at Afghanistan. Have a look at Iraq. These aren't, you know, none of these achieved the outcomes of where we started at the start. I mean, if this was a business or a corporation, you'd be judged on, you know, well, what was your objective and did you meet it? And well, no, we didn't of any time. And yet we're so easy to throw young men, often at the prime of their lives, to to these senseless battles over and over. And the lessons from 1915 haven't been learned. We're at a stage in life at the moment where we could be on the brink of a massive war again. And it's just that same rhetoric just keeps coming over and over. And to me, that's the most frustrating. And it all comes out, unfortunately, around the 25th of April.
I think it's worth, for me, also highlighting those who are not Turkish, who attend Gallipoli commemoration ceremonies, but also those, you know, I don't remember at all in my time growing up in Australia ever being felt or made to feel any negative feelings from, you know, nobody ever looked at me and said, oh, your great-great uncles killed my great-great uncles, etc. And to me, that's in a lot of ways also something to be celebrated and commended as well. I mean, I think if we're going to commemorate Anzac Day, we should also celebrate how, again, as I mentioned, I think this is a unique conflict in history, but we should also celebrate how quickly that healing process took place. And I can't imagine anybody in Australia or New Zealand feeling one bit of negative feeling or angst. In fact, I think it's probably the opposite. I think most sane people would be feeling a sense of guilt and a sense of kind of shame, I suppose, in a lot of ways. And they shouldn't. They had nothing to do with it. So I think that's also a really positive sign that maybe the rhetoric is just rhetoric. It's not moving people to kind of think negatively about who the enemy was at that point in time. Of course, over 100 years have gone past, so it's a bit different. But you look at recent conflicts in whether it's in the Middle East or wherever, you mentioned Iraq, Afghanistan, that rhetoric did take hold. And suddenly many people on the side of the allies started treating people who may have been Muslim, who may have been from a Middle Eastern kind of background, did start looking at them as the enemy. And that's why I say this conflict is pretty unique. I think, maybe it's the way Australians are. You know, we don't fall victim to those sorts of rhetoric and that hate that comes with some of that rhetoric that gets blown up. I'm not sure. But I think that's very, very interesting. I think, you know, it's very hard to look at any other conflict in history where healing like that occurred very quickly and people feel very, I would say, in some sense, admirable and positive feelings towards the other side. And that goes, I think, from the Turkish side as well. I mean, I don't know too many Turks, certainly not ones that I would spend time with, who look at it and say, oh, look at those Australians and New Zealanders. They tried to take over our country. They're the enemy, and hold on to these feelings of animosity or what have you. I have to be honest with you, the same can't be said about other people and other conflicts that Turkey was involved in back then, around about that time. I mean, you look at the Armenian situation, you look at the Turkish and the Greek kind of conflict. There's no love lost there between those two peoples. And that rhetoric continues to thrive, and that rhetoric continues to poison people's minds. I get very disappointed when I speak to, well, most of the time I don't speak to them, but, you know, I have had in the past people of Armenian background in Australia ignore me or be very rude because of my country of birth. This to me is unacceptable and this should not be occurring. So maybe Anzac Day is something that's worth celebrating as a kind of, as a point of history that's very unique, where two people can fight in the trenches and then decades later, be feeling a great deal of sympathy towards each other.
And it's interesting because Australian and Turks obviously fought on the same side of the Korea battle, right? So it's fascinating that as a result of that, then, you know, Turkish people and Turkish cultural institutions were allowed to then march in Anzac Day marches around Australia, and that level of camaraderie that then came from suddenly being on the same side of history rather than opposing sides. And of course, the way that Turks have welcomed Australians, New Zealanders and others into that, what is extremely sacred territory. You know, if anyone who's been to Gallipoli will know that every inch and every corner of that land is sacred for Turks, and it holds You know, Turks would often refer to as the souls and the bloods of the martyrs who fought in World War One to defend their country. And of course, that 1934 address by Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, which is read out every Anzac Day, those words are absolutely incredible. And I can't think of any other battle where, you know, he says that those heroes that shed their blood and lost their lives, you're now lying in the soil of a friendly country, therefore rest in peace. He goes on to say, there's no difference between the Johnnies and the Mehmets to us, where they lie side by side now here in this country of ours. He addresses the mums and says, you, the mothers who sent their sons from faraway countries, wipe away your tears. Your sons are now lying in our bosom and are in peace. After having lost their lives on this land, they have become our sons as well. They're familiar words to Australians, no doubt, because they are read at every Anzac Day ceremony. To me, they highlight the humility and respect shown by a nation to the fallen on both sides. And it's hard to imagine other countries in the modern era doing the same. You mentioned a few then. You know, it's in that regard, there is an ongoing effort, I think, to point out the facts and highlight it, rather than make it around this, you know, this rhetoric around war or national identity, etc. I guess moving forward, the critical thing and the lessons to me is to ensure that the lessons of senseless wars are learnt, that we understand the facts and what is actually happening, or what has happened in the past, and the impact that it has on people. We're lucky, I think, in a sense, both you and I, that the extent that we describe our experiences in Australia was that it was a confusing day and it was a confusing moment, the end. It wasn't, you know, we weren't met with violence, we weren't met with hostility, we weren't being rude to, or we didn't return that either. I think, you know, I was in high school when September 11 happened, and anyone who displayed any physical signs of being from the Middle East, not necessarily being Muslim either, you know, there was a sense of aggression and there was a sense of, you know, all Muslims are terrorists, or anyone from the Middle East. My grandmother wears the headscarf. She was spat on a bus one day after that period. And, you know, I mean, to think of the what could have been, except it wasn't for us as Turkish Australians, and the extent of which we criticize it is, well, it was confusing. Mate, that's a privilege that very few people, I think, get to live in this world.
No doubt. I think I'll take confusing any day over any of those other things that you mentioned. And look, it's absolutely right. I think if you're looking at it from that perspective, even today, we've got conflicts that are sparking or bringing up such kind of hatred, you know, and a lot of conflicts that we don't hear about in Africa, for example, in Yemen, in some parts of India. You know, we covered India last week, and this sort of tension and conflicts. And I think what I'm getting from our conversation is that you and I are firmly of the view that Anzac Day is worth celebrating, but perhaps putting up front what Anzac Day should be. And it should be a show to the world about how two peoples can fight it out for confusing reasons, for objectives that weren't clear to anybody, but then can be so kind to each other. Every Anzac Day, I put that on my social media postings, those words by Mustafa Kemal Atatürk. But, you know, to hear something like that, and that was, if I'm correct, that was in 1934 he made those comments, you know, not even 20 years after the conflict had ended. And trying to think of a leader that would have such sympathy, empathy, care for a group of people who tried to destroy his people and his country, I don't know. I mean, I can't think of any world leader that would kind of behave in that way today. So it you know, just goes to show the strength of that and the uniqueness of this conflict. And I suppose what it's done, you know, I remember more and more Anzac Day types of events that, you know, when I worked in government that I went to, that theme of friendship was getting stronger and stronger every year. And I think that's super important to highlight. And that probably that rhetoric that we listen to growing up is somewhat being replaced with, you know, this is a time to commemorate losses on both sides, understand that both sides made sacrifices. While we're confused about the sacrifices, I don't want to devalue that people lost their lives, and that's the ultimate sacrifice, I suppose, that you make for your country, whether it's for a good reason or not. I suppose that's a subjective view. They made sacrifices, the Turks made certain sacrifices. You know, we commemorate those and we say, you know, that we don't want to ever go through that again.
A great note to end on, my friend. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
And that's been this week's episode of Put Simply. Be sure to follow us on LinkedIn at Oroku Group to stay up to date with all the latest episodes and news. Feel free to leave a comment and suggestions on what you'd like to see featured on the podcast as well. Until next time, I'm Erdem Koch.
And I'm Ozan Ibrahim.
Thanks for listening.